Hare Krishna. I'll answer some questions today that I've collected in my questions folder. I'm in New Brajadam. It's snowing outside. The ground's completely white. It's cold. It's about 1 degree. All of a sudden, the weather here went from summer to fall to winter, more or less in the space of a week. A week ago, it was in the 20s. I was wearing my summer coat. A couple of days after that, I took out my autumn coat. And 3-4 days ago, I took out my winter coat. Very unpredictable what happens with the weather nowadays. And that's par for the course for Kali Yuga. Everything is unpredictable. I'm continuing with my fast, enjoying eating khichdi once a day. About 2/3 of the devotees here in New Brajadam are doing it, and they're also very enthusiastic. Now I'm just clearing up whether the fast is broken tomorrow evening or whether it's broken at Purnima, at moonrise, excuse me, or whether it's broken the following day. If it's broken in the evening, then it's a very merciful fast. It went from being a 5-day fast to a 4-day fast. And even the 4-day fast, you break the fast on the 4th day, which you could even say is almost a 3.5-day fast. But if it's pleasing to Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani, then any way they like us to fast is fine. And especially if they're pleased by us feasting on their Mahaprasadam, that's also fine. So here, Tanupriya, who's doing Sankirtan in Coventry, Hungarian devotee, she's asking the following. We know that the deity is Krishna himself, who, here we are back to deity worship. However, people, especially Muslims, don't have faith in that. Sometimes they ask, if Krishna is there in the deity, how is it possible to break it? What can we tell them? Well, the principle of the Lord appearing in material elements is what should be understood here, in the same way that Mahaprasadam is Krishna's mercy and is non-different than Krishna's internal potency. In the same way, the deity is Krishna's internal potency. However, a aspect of the internal potency is the external potency. The Maya Devi is a manifestation of Rama Devi, or goddess of fortune. And the perception of the internal potency as opposed to its external manifestation is dependent upon the vision of the beholder. Just like in the material world, they have the saying, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So if one is transcendentally situated, then he will see the eternal form of the Lord. However, for those who are materially tainted or situated on the material platform, for them they see the external potency. Thus, although the deity is non-different than Krishna and is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, for conditioned souls, he appears in the material elements because that's what they can see. And because he appears in the material elements, therefore those material elements in which he's manifest continue to follow the laws of material nature, just like prasadam is completely transcendental. But prasadam also decomposes, just like other food decomposes, because Krishna's special mercy has manifested itself in the form of the material ingredients like rice and wheat and sugar and ghee that we prepare, which are subject to the laws of nature. And while the deity can manifest his fully transcendental potency, he generally does not do that. He will do that for his pure devotee, but he's not going to do it for a non-believer and an ordinary person who simply ridicules him. For instance, Shakshi Gopal deity walked thousands of kilometers from Vrindavan to South India at the request of his pure devotee. Now, deities don't walk, but Krishna walks. And for his pure devotee, Krishna in the form of a deity also walks. But he's not going to walk for anyone who simply wants to challenge Krishna's existence. Therefore, we have to start everything with the proper philosophical understanding. The understanding of philosophy, the principles of tattva, are there as a prerequisite for us to properly practice Krishna consciousness, and the proper practice of Krishna consciousness requires faith. When our faith matures and raises us to the transcendental platform, then we will see those things which we have had faith in earlier. But until then, you can't avoid faith. So when the faithless want to challenge us to manifest things that are based upon faith, then all we can do is answer them with logic. And whether they accept our logic or not is up to them. But ultimately, you can't replace ghee with water. Similarly, you can't replace faith with logic. And this is the same way they function in their own religions. Particularly here, you've referred to those of the Muslim faith. Now, another one. Dharma Setu Prabhu says, in one of your previous podcasts, you mentioned something on the lines of principles come before people in relation to the management of ISKCON and spreading of Krishna consciousness. Could you elaborate on this principle and maybe give an example of it? I can't remember what the example was, so I'll just take it as a fresh question. And let me give one example, which is the example of Lord Ramchandra. Lord Ramchandra was a king, and a king has to be above suspicion. That is a principle. If his conduct or that of his family is questionable, then he can't lead, because the people don't have faith in him. When Lord Ramchandra heard that just a low-class washerman was doubting Sita Devi's chastity because she stayed for almost a year in the home of another man, especially a demon like Ravana, then he banished her. Now, in this case, Lord Ramchandra is sacrificing Sita Devi as a person, as well as his own individual desires as a husband and a protector of his wife for the greater principle of maintaining the dharma of a king. In the same way, in ISKCON, we often may have to sacrifice our personal likes for the greater good of the society or for maintaining religious principles. When I say that principles come before people, I mean that dharma or religious principles come before the whims of the individual. We may have many likes and dislikes, and there may even be valid concerns of individuals. But we as Vaishnavas must always fulfill our personal needs only along the lines of dharma. If our personal desires conflict with dharma, then we should sacrifice our personal desires. And if our personal desires are dharmic, but they conflict with a higher principle of dharma, as was the case here of Lord Ramachandra, or what Krishna explains to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, that the principle of leaving women unprotected and thus the degradation of family was a lower principle than what Krishna was asking of Arjuna, which was simply to surrender to him and do his duty fighting as a Kshatriya. So in this case, there was a conflict of two principles of dharma, in which one has to judge which one is higher and lower. This type of prioritizing rights goes on not only in a Krishna conscious world, not only in a religious sense, but it goes on also in the material world. There are so many laws to protect the rights of the individual. But when the rights of the individual conflict with the rights of the people at large, then the individual has to take second place. So in this way, at least I'm explaining this question about principles coming before people. And the last question is from Dushyanta Prabhu, who is just here in New Rajadam, visiting from Wales. He says in the book called Human Devolution by Michael Cremo, in the introduction, he's talking about the region of pure consciousness. As we experience consciousness as individual and personal, this suggests that the original source of consciousness is individual and personal. If consciousness is eternal without beginning and end, how would there be an original source? A source of consciousness suggests a beginning. Well, I don't have the book in front of me. In fact, I don't have the book here in New Rajadam. It's in Budapest. But if I take this, a region of pure consciousness, what's being talked about is the purity of consciousness, not the origin of consciousness. We are conscious, and as individuals, we're also conscious. However, our consciousness is not pure. And for us to purify our consciousness, we chant Hare Krishna, we engage in spiritual activities that free us from false identification with matter, because we've adopted an identity with this body, with this world, and so many things, and that is impure consciousness. However, there is a region which is the spiritual world, which is the original source of the living entity, which is a region of pure consciousness, where one does not have any false identity as being anything else other than Krishna's servant, and is always directly engaged in that type of service. So our origin may be there. It doesn't mean that our consciousness originated. The consciousness is as eternal as the soul is, because it is the symptom of the soul. However, our consciousness is originally pure, and it's become contaminated by our having turned away from Krishna. And therefore, we are here in this material world, which is the region of the individual impure consciousness. And from this place of impure consciousness, we want to go to the place of pure consciousness. All right, if you want to know about tomorrow's breakfast, then either I will report on tomorrow's podcast, or if I have the info earlier, I'll put it on in writing onto the podcast itself. All right, be in touch. Hare Krishna, everyone.